Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
I'm still going to throw you off not opening with a quote or anything. Like, honestly, threw me off this week.
Oh, are we on air?
We're on air. This is episode, I think we're 426 of the White Book / I think maybe episode 7 or so of Props and Slops.
Well, welcome aboard. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Will.
Today we are propping and slopping only 6 things. I think this is going to be our smallest episode ever.
I mean, I could squeeze in like 1 or 2 other things if we need something fast.
I mean, but I've got minor a category that I'm going to go off on. So
that's fair. Okay. Do you want to start with your category then, or should we start with one of my standalones?
Let's start with The Last Policeman.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a continuation of the depressing media I was consuming last time on Props and Slops. This time I read a novel. It's a sci-fi novel I'd had recommended to me a while back and had it sitting on the back burner. So I finally picked it up last Friday and then like finished it Monday, which I thought was pretty good considering that the book is a super downer. It's a near future sci-fi novel. And by near future, I mean it's a hypothetical like next year, right? Like the main character mentions the Backstreet Boys when he was a kid, that type of thing, right? Oh. But it's a hypothetical near future where scientists have determined that a 6.5 kilometer asteroid will collide with the Earth. And by the time we are reading the book and joining things, it's about 6 months out. It has been known for about 3 months. And society is already kind of starting to unwind. And there's just this like weight to everything, right? This oppressiveness. One of the characters mentions a phrase that actually the main character kind of jots down as really solidifying the feeling for him. She mentions the phrase, all this unbearable imminence, which I thought was a nice turn of phrase. So, you know, things are winding down, suicides are extremely common, and everybody is just kind of waiting for the world to end, so to speak. Whether you're doing that, you know, working on your job, and trying to make the best of it, or whether you are bailing out and going bucket list, as they say in the novel, you're headed off to Tahiti or whatever, or as I mentioned, suicides are very common in the novel. So the story follows a newly minted police detective who encounters a dead gentleman who has been kind of ruled a suicide, but he feels is probably actually a murder. And he doggedly follows that up because that's just his personality. And he's kind of a standout in the world, in still kind of wanting to doggedly take things by the book and so on. So it's honestly a pretty standard, like, noir sort of story, but I dug it, as despite the fact that type of looming imminence maybe is not the best read for everybody in 2020, but overall I do recommend it.
I mean, honestly, as long as you liked it, it did its job. It does not sound like it's for me. I generally don't like cop fiction.
I honestly can't say I've read much at all or anything other than this. Depends maybe if you count. I mean, there's some other sci-fi I've read, Asimov's stories, right? Like some of the three laws of robotics stuff follow a policeman and his robot partner. Does that count?
Vaguely. Yeah, sure. Why not? But even like movies that were they're just following cops are generally not really for me anymore.
That's fair. Totally fair.
The world in the past few years has made me less likely to side with embedded power.
Yeah.
Even in fiction. So it is what it is. All right. Next up, I've got two JRPGs. I'm at the midpoint of both. They have eaten up the majority of my time. So I've played, both are very old. I'm playing...
Yeah, they're both SNES era, aren't they?
One is NES era.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Was that... Keep going.
Dragon Quest IV is NES era, although I am playing the DS remake, which was ported over to cell phones.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And, so you're playing on your cell phone?
I'm playing on my phone, yeah. I've got... Okay. We'll get there. And I'm playing Lufia 2, the Rise of the Sinestrals, okay. Which yep. Everyone has told me for literal decades that I would love, and I never played for one reason. So let's talk about that first. I hate puzzle dungeons. Like, it's the reason I don't really tend to like Zeldas or action RPGs either.
Yeah, that was my first thought, was Zelda.
But yeah, I just genuinely don't like puzzle dungeons at all. They're not for me. They don't really work for me. I don't enjoy them. So puzzle dungeons are not it for me. But turns out if you just read a fact, there aren't puzzle dungeons. It's
brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I'm playing it on the, I got, I mean, let's get arrested. I bought a modded 3DS. Modded 2DS, which means I couldn't.
I think you were looking at that on eBay, right? Last time we recorded.
Well, I bought it. I've got something else we'll get to in a minute, too. But which means I also could have played all these other games on that DS, but I like having things going on different systems at the same time so that I pick up a different thing based on my interest. I don't know why it mentally makes a difference to me, but it really does. Like, if I was switching between Lufia and Dragon Quest on the same system, I would be less inclined to play both. But if I have them on two different systems, I have no problem switching between them.
Okay.
It's really just an excellent classic game, and I'm very, very impressed with how little grinding there is. Like, you grind for about 10 minutes every so often, and you're basically at or above level for everything the game wants you to do. It's got no random battles inside dungeons, which is just truly excellent.
Thank goodness. But does it on the world map?
Yeah, but they're rare enough, so it's not an issue. Like, you get where you're going pretty quickly. The only if you see a bunch, you're looking for them.
Okay.
You'll get one to two when you're traveling between places. And there's spells that take you any place you've been before and that take you to the back to the beginning of dungeons and stuff. Actually, in both games. So, like, neither of those is a super huge issue. Lufia is truly excellent. If you like puzzle dungeons, then I can see why it would be one of the best RPGs ever to you. As I don't think it is yet, although I hear there is a part two to the game, so I will update as we get there.
Okay.
Dragon Quest is grindy, and I feel like they really could have just fixed that, but I, given that it's an NES Dragon Quest game, that's part of the appeal. I got it because I think it's like, I don't consider most NES games to be modern enough JRPGs to be really like to count.
Man, have you played Final Fantasy III, like the actual III that was on NES?
No.
It blew me away when I got into it. It is not a like modern JRPG, but it is very much on par with like Super Nintendo JRPGs for sure.
Really? Well, I'll add that to the list since now I'm doing this way anyway. It's actually the only Final Fantasy 1 through 10 I didn't play. I like 4. Wow.
You played 2? Like the original two?
Yeah, it's absolutely atrocious. I didn't get through 1 and 2, but I played a bunch of them back when I thought I was trying to. So
I gave up on 2 as well.
In my early 20s, I played like 45 RPGs. Mm-hmm. Where I was just like, I'm just going to play all of these. There were like 3 or 4 I really liked as a kid, but we never had much money. So when I started working, I was like, I'm buying RPGs. And then I got out of them for 15-ish years. And now there's a quarantine. So I started playing more Switch. I tried to do Metroidvanias. And then when I played Fire Emblem, I was like, you know what I actually wanted to play is just go back to JRPGs. Metroidvanias require like reflexes. And I don't have those anymore. JRPGs generally don't. So I bought the 3DS. GameStop had a buy two, get one free for Memorial Day weekend. So I bought from GameStop. I got Xenoblade 2, Dragon Quest 11, and then Tokyo Mirage Session, hashtag Fire Emblem, hashtag FE. Which haven't arrived yet, but they're shipping. And I bought another hack system. I bought a hacked Vita that basically has all the PS1 and PSP and Vita games I've always wanted to play that I haven't.
Okay.
So that is still in route as well. I haven't played either of those. But my goal is basically to have 5 RPGs going at any given time. One on the phone. And we'll talk about Dragon Quest specifically in a minute. One on the phone, because I downloaded Dragon Quest IV, Dragon Quest V, Shining Force 1 and 2, and Phantasy Star 4. I've played the Shining Force, and I'm trying not to replay. That's one of my goals.
Oh, Shining Force 2 is so good, as is Phantasy Star 4. Oh, man. So
I played Phantasy Star 2 and liked, but it was really not my, like, it was too much for me. Like, once you get that far back, the games are usually too much for me. Like, they're just like, I don't love first-person dungeons and that sort of thing. So I never played 4, and so 4 is my next phone game. So I'm going to go Dragon Quest 4, Phantasy Star 4, Dragon Quest 5.
4 took a little bit for me to get into, partly because that first person thing, like you mentioned, I'm so used to JRPGs being third, especially for combat. And I think the world threw me off for a little bit because it's sort of sci-fi, but there's some fantasy stuff going on. So it took me a little bit to get in. But once you kind of get grounded, I thought it was easily as good as most, Super Nintendo JRPGs. So
go ahead. No, please.
Just, I was going to say the earlier Phantasy Stars, I could never quite get into. 2 was more similar. 3 felt way out in left field. And I admit I've never played the first.
I loaded 1 and was like, oh, this is not it.
Yeah.
A lot of what made Final Fantasy VII successful is stuff that's just taken from Phantasy Star.
Go on.
The major character death, the sci-fi world where you're traveling around, the fight against the corrupt government. Like, a lot of that is very, okay. very Phantasy Star. And I don't think it's accidental. I think, like, it's like, man, these games are great. Imagine if they were actually user-friendly.
Yeah.
And that's what Final Fantasy did. It was like, okay, we're going to slap 6 and Phantasy Star together, and let's go. And it worked great, apparently. I don't like 7 very much, but everyone else on Earth apparently does. So.
I mean, it's good. It's not my favorite, but it's good.
It's... I like it better than 1, 2, and 5, but I like it less than... And I probably like it better than 8. I don't remember 8 super well.
8? I was talking about this with a friend maybe last week. 8 was really a terrible game to try to play. Like, all the systems in it, I just despised. But it has a fun story and phenomenal cutscenes. So if you can talk some other friend into playing it and being the schmuck, and you just sit and watch, it is actually very enjoyable.
So the Switch remake has what all the Final Fantasy remakes do, where, like, you can just max your level and power through everything. So at some point in my life, I'm going to do that. Given that I probably have about 50 RPGs to get through right now, I don't think. But at some point, I plan to do that just to, like, actually get through the story. I have a habit of getting, like, right to the end of RPGs and dropping them. It was a good, like, 10, 15 years before I beat Chrono Trigger. I just kept, like, starting at the beginning and getting up to the last boss and giving up.
I can't blame you. Wait, giving up because you didn't want it to end? Or giving up because you couldn't beat him?
No, giving up because I didn't want to end. I definitely power level. Which is transitioning us back to Dragon Quest IV, because, my God, do you have to grind a lot. So it's got this very, very cool thing where it's taking you through each of what are eventually going to be your companion stories, and they each get their own chapter before you go back to your main character to get everyone together. So, like, I really like all these side characters. I've done everything up to get the main character getting everyone together. So I'm very excited to get to the point where, like, I get to bring all these, like, different little groups of people that I've been traveling with together and, like, figure out how this works together. It's really, really engaging narratively, but you're starting with everyone at level 1, and the very first thing you do with everyone at level 1 is, like, grind them to level, like, 5 to 7, and that's at least, like, a half hour to 45 minutes of just, like, walking a circle around town, mash attacks. Stop trying to scratch me, cat. Sorry.
Wow. So every time you get a new party member, then they start at 1?
No, because you're not getting a new party member. It'll say, like, the very first chapter is, like, just you being introduced to the main character, and then it goes to chapter, like, it's a prologue, then chapter 1 starts, and you're a castle guard, and that castle guard is going about his own mission, and at the end of that mission, he finds out about the main character, and is going to go off to find him. And then, like, it cuts to a totally different character who's, like, a princess who's, like, a tomboy and travels and wants to, like, go prove her strength. And, like, eventually she encounters a mystery and it cuts away. And, like, she's going to end up meeting the protagonist. Like, it's just their individual stories from the start. And then the protagonist will meet them at whatever level they are when you've left them off, about 15.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it sort of sounds a little bit like some of the issues we were talking about with Octopath the other day, actually.
So I know they're getting together and going to have one plot, so I'm much more inclined to play.
Okay.
Like, each character, they're not traveling together with their individual stories. They're having their individual stories. Like, they have their own lives, and then they meet the hero. So, like, I don't know. Imagine in Final Fantasy VI, when you meet, who do you meet reasonably late? So Cyan? Cyan's reasonably late, right?
Yeah. Or so, like Strago or something.
Sure. So before you met either of them, they're going to come at level like 20, right? So instead of just coming at level 20, you get their lives up to that point and how they got to level 20.
Gotcha. So you have to kind of play a side story before you get to get back into the main groove.
Yeah, well, we haven't even introduced the main story. The main story is not going to be complicated. Evil God is coming. protagonist is the only one who can stop it. Everyone else has different reasons for helping him. But that's fine. I don't mind that plot as long as I like the characters. And so far, I've universally liked the characters. I get their motivation. There's nice little party talk. I'm really, really enjoying it. Like, I'm enjoying it enough that I immediately downloaded 5, which is supposed to be the best of the series, and I bought 11.
Okay.
5 seems incredible. If you haven't heard of 5, 5 starts you as a little kid, and you grow up, become enslaved, have to escape, get married, have kids, adventure with your kids. Like, it's your whole life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for an SNES RPG, it's incredible.
That's awesome. It looks like it's $15 on the phone. It's kind of tempting.
I mean, it's
one of these screenshots looks like it's Oregon Trail. Like, I can see you're leading a whole party with a little covered wagon and a horse and stuff. What?
I haven't played 5 yet. 5 is, I'm really excited for 5. I was going to start with it, but I figured I wanted to start with not the best of the series. Because sure. I started Final Fantasy with 6, 3 at the time. And then everything else was disappointing, except maybe 9. So I figured don't start with the very best, and then you can still actually enjoy the others.
Yeah, that's very understandable.
So, I'm really excited for this. I'm finally going to play Persona 3 and Persona 4 as soon as the Vita arrives. So, yeah.
Okay. I've never played the Persona games, but I've heard good things.
I loved 2 and played the fan translation on the PSP of Innocent Sin. Persona 2 was 2 games, and only one was released in America, because of course it was. So I ended up playing both of them, and am a really, really huge fan. It's super hard, but fine. Did you play Digital Devil Saga?
No, that name doesn't even ring a bell. What was that?
It's a Mega Ten side game where, like, it did a lot of stuff with, like, alternate reality, but you turned into your personas, and you gain power by eating enemies, whether they be sentient or not. And it was just very freaky and very, very well put together. Cel-shaded graphics. Really, really, really good PS2 game. But unfortunately, PS2 emulation is a mild, mild pain in the ass, so I don't think I'm going to play it.
Gotcha.
Oh, and again, no remakes. New stuff.
New stuff. Okay.
New old stuff, anyway. I'll never understand people that are like, I have to play the newest video game that came out, unless it's like a series you already love, because anything you haven't played is just new to you. Like, so
yeah, these days, for the most part, I can afford, so to speak, to be a patient gamer, as the saying goes, and wait for stuff to come up on sale.
I haven't spent any money since break started at first break. That's a nice way to say it. At first I was drinking a lot. And then I haven't drank at all in like 2 months, which means that like I just had that extra money. So I was like, you know what? I'll do this. This will be a thing I do. So here we are. So far, I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm doing that, playing Magic with the majority of my free time.
I mean, that sounds not too shabby.
Could be worse.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up is She-Ra Season 5.
Yeah. Whew. I'm glad you got She-Ra out of that, because I see in the chat I've actually typed Zgira, so that's something else.
I messaged the actual specific order just to you, and I fixed the typo.
Thank you. we've been following this new She-Ra series since just last year, actually, though the way Netflix tends to put out these animated show seasons, they power through a bunch of seasons in just a couple years anyway. Mm-hmm. So Season 5 was the final season, and it was not, as I understand it, a like surprise rush cancellation. They were told well ahead of time, and they planned for the arc to head to this ending. And for the most part, I liked it. I really, really enjoyed the show, pretty much top to bottom. Tons of characters are super entertaining. Most of them get a solid, not everybody gets an arc, but at least solid amounts of screen time and interesting insights into their lives or thought processes. But a lot of characters do get arcs. It's just it's a really funny show, but really, really very enjoyable. I liked it with one caveat, and this is the one that's probably going to be fighting words to some people on the internet. Everyone's favorite ship, so to speak, is Catra and Adora, She-Ra herself. Mm-hmm. And I just, by the end of the series, did not buy it. Like, I feel like Catra really needed at least another season to work on redeeming and stuff. Like, she was actively trying to kill all of the other characters right up until like the instant this started, and then everyone just accepts her back. I mean, Bo comments once, like, hey, wait a minute, you were just trying to kill us, and then everyone just like goes, eh, oh well. Like, there were, I don't know, there was more work put in to like Shadow Weaver than in Catra's about face, and it just made her happy ending feel unearned to me. They spent a lot of time in the previous four seasons making her as toxic of a person as humanly possible or cat personly possible.
Can I do a spoiler question?
Yeah, go for it.
Does she survive?
Yes. Yes, she does.
And yeah, it doesn't work. I think that kind of thing only really works. Like, I'm fine with that if the character dies.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I should say, you know, it's a lesbian relationship and whatever. Like, I couldn't possibly care less about that. It's just that Catra's turn and reacceptance by everybody did not feel earned.
Mm-hmm. It's what's his name? Ben Solo problem.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
It's, yeah, where if you're murderous and genocidal, then just saying sorry doesn't really do it.
Yeah, there's a lifetime of, you know, fixing that needs to be really involved. But I understand showing that in a TV show is not really feasible. But give me an extra like season's worth of work toward it, and I'll roll with it. But having it happen effectively in just a couple episodes just doesn't fly.
I very much agree. It's a consistent problem of mine in fiction, where there need to be actual consequences for horrible actions. Which is why I'm looking forward to, haven't started it yet, am going too soon. That's why I'm looking forward to Avatar so much, because I hear it does the redemption arc really well.
Yeah, I need to do Avatar now that it's on Netflix. Trying to convince Kristen, but she has a real like anti-anime stance, even though it's not strictly actually an anime. So
have you seen it before?
No, I have not.
Yeah, me neither. I think I'm spoiled on basically the whole thing at this point, just because it's been around for so long. But I'm very, very excited for it. It's just I need to finish Clone Wars first, and then watch the rest of the movies with my wife, or she's going to kill me. She's just like, can we just watch the movies and skip Clone Wars? I'm like, absolutely not. Exactly. Not even a little. Not even.
Well, speaking of, how's Clone Wars going?
It's fantastic. Like, it's consistently amazing. Unexpectedly, I didn't care for the Darth Maul stuff. Have you seen it?
We've started it, but we're very, very early, like season one.
Okay, so there's not a huge spoiler if you've seen Solo. There's some Darth Maul stuff. And everyone loves it, but I don't really. I think it's fine. My wife actually really enjoyed all the Darth Maul stuff and the stuff leading up to it. But I really like the soldiers a lot. I like the clone soldier stories. I like how it gets so deep into their backstory. And I love Ahsoka. So it's really working for me. I'm at like the peak of Anakin is a hero at this point. I'm like in season 5. And okay. I'm still not ready. Like, my big problem with the prequels has always been not even the acting, which is absolutely atrocious. I can deal with that because, you know, Star Wars is fun. But, like, I just don't buy that the dark side takes over the way it does. Like, it was never set up that way. And
like,
then
he has the opposite to the Ben Solo problem. Like, his fall isn't earned.
Right, he's just like, and if you do everything and just get rid of the kills the children part, I can buy that in 20 years he's blowing up planets, right?
Yeah.
But like that, like the instant he goes from like, I'm really sad to I'm murdering children that I know, like, it's a leap that destroys, like, the second that happens, I'm just like, this, what? That's not the same character. Like, why? Like, if you're going to show a character turn, like a wizard did it, is like you just spent 3 movies trying to go, no, it wasn't a wizard did it. It made sense. And then like at the end, you're just like, nah, a wizard did it. Gotcha. Like, it doesn't work for me at all. And like, that's probably my least favorite movie, sheerly on that moment. Although, Rise of the Skywalker really gave it a push.
I didn't mind Rise, but we probably need a whole episode to devote to Star Wars if we're going to get
it. We'll just skip less today. Rise just didn't feel like a movie.
It was 2 movies. That's why.
Yeah, fair. Like, it's just like, it was just like a bunch of stuff. And like, it was just shot weird. Like, it just didn't, like, the others all at least feel like movies. Even if they're bad movies, they're movies, right? Like, Rise was weird and amateurish, and I didn't know what to do with that in my head. Where it's like, wait, this is happening now? Why is this happening now? Wait, we're on a fetch quest? Wait, we're on another fetch quest? Like, this is the last movie. You're not supposed to be doing fetch quests in the last movie. Like, what is even... I don't know. It just narratively was like... all right, whatever. But yeah. So, I've just spent 5 seasons watching Anakin be a hero with a hint of like rebelliousness, but I'm still not ready to buy him murdering children. Although supposedly season 6 and 7 get there, and that's basically where I am. So I'm really excited to see that happen.
Okay.
But everything else has been truly excellent. Like, I don't like young Obi-Wan, especially in the prequels, and I love him in the show. Like, it's just, everything is perfectly characterized. There have been, like, 3 or 4 different arcs where I was like, this should have just been its own movie.
I know. I saw a thing a while back that basically said that one of the biggest problems with the prequel trilogy is that the Phantom Menace exists. Mm-hmm. Like, it should not. Attack of the Clones effectively should be the first movie. The Clone Wars then should be the second movie, and then Revenge should be the third.
Oh, 100% accurate.
Yeah. That would clear up a lot of the wonkiness.
Yep. And there's a million arcs. There's like literally at least 4 arcs off the top of my head that would work completely fine as that Clone Wars movie. So.
Yep.
I don't know what happened. I guess I do know what happened. George Lucas told what he wanted to tell, and he was rich and powerful, so he got to do it.
Yeah, at that point, there was 0 people around to say no.
Yeah. Not that people around to say no really did an awful lot in hindsight for the new trilogy. But
I think the new trilogy had the opposite problem. There was not really anybody in that Lucas position with a, oh man, I've got this plan. Yeah. It just feels hodgepodge top to bottom.
I mean, I don't know how you write a trilogy without knowing where it's going, without writing it in advance. It's just, it's so bushly. Just write all 3 movies and then like shoot them. Right? Like, there's a million people who would literally kill to write that movie. Have commission your Star Wars and your Disney. You have all the money in the world. Commission 10 trilogies and pick the best 3.
Yeah, yeah. You can't tell me that Disney did not have the people available to do that.
Yeah, just hire outside. Be like, you, 10 writers, you're all writing trilogies. We will pick one. Done.
Yep.
Problem solved. Like, right? Like, I'll never understand how and why they do this. They did that way. But either way, Clone Wars is, I think, the best thing Disney's ever done.
Okay. That's pretty high praise.
Sorry, no. The best thing Star Wars has ever done. Okay. Probably not the best thing Disney's ever done, because Aladdin still exists.
Yes! Oh, thank God you said the right movie.
It's the best. Also, I mean, like, Endgame.
Also.
And Infinity War. Like, I don't feel... I mean, I guess that's just having one person in charge, right? The power of having one person in charge, but like the ability to get from point A to point like Z in that series is completely amazing.
Right. It's phenomenal. I can only hope that some of the rumors milling around about Filoni potentially being moved to a similar position for Lucasfilm turn into something real. It seems very obvious from the Clone Wars that he kind of has his heart and brain in the right place to keep things moving.
I would be very
okay with Mandalorian, that. For that matter.
Yeah, Mandalorian was excellent. Clone Wars is significantly better than Mandalorian, though.
Okay.
Like,
I'm even more intrigued to make it deeper in.
I mean, I really liked Mandalorian, but Mandalorian meandered. And Clone, I mean, maybe it's also the order. I'm watching Ritter's Order for Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you're just hitting the highlights.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, and like it jumps back and forth between seasons. So I'm getting complete arcs instead of like a chunk here and a chunk there.
Gotcha.
But it's still totally worth it. If you don't have Ritter's Order, drop the show an email and we can get it to you.
Yeah.
Available now if you just Patreon. No.
that would be fantastic.
Ritter would murder us.
Oh man, we should start doing that. We could offer that on our OnlyFans. We could just we could give out preferred watch orders for TV shows.
Oh man, just skip season one of Parks and Rec. Problem solved.
Man, that reminds me. I saw this super dark theory about season one of Parks and Rec. Did you see that?
No.
About what happened to, I can't think of his name now, the city planner?
Ben? No, that's Ben Wyatt. No, Mark. Mark.
Mark.
Some dumb long name.
Yes. Yeah. Brandanowicz.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the theory is that he committed suicide. And then that's why he is never mentioned at all from there on out. It's just too painful for Leslie.
That makes sense. It's horrible.
Yeah, there was more to the theory that like they spelled out different, you know, hints at it here and there. But that was the gist.
Sure, but like I've worked at a job for 9 years now. There's coworkers we just stopped mentioning.
Yeah.
Like it's not like he was everyone's best friend, right? Like, he was around for a year or two, and then he left. He moved on. Like, I'm literally thinking of coworkers right now that I haven't thought of in 5 years. It's just... Like, some people move on in jobs, and they just weren't impressive or memorable enough, or, like, you weren't close enough with them, even if they were. And they're just gone from your, like, life and experience.
Yeah.
Also, he was terrible. He was so boring.
Yeah. Losing him was one of the better choices the show made.
Yeah. No offense to the actor, who I'm sure is perfectly fine. That was not a well-written or interesting character, though.
Yeah. No, I'm sure he's done other things that I would quite enjoy. But, yeah, he just didn't happen to fit the show.
Yep, I completely agree. All right, so what is the Legend of Runeterra?
Okay, is that a generic question, or do you actually not heard of it? No,
I've heard of it, and I don't remember why.
Okay. So it is a new digital card game, CCG, put out by Riot.
The Fleming makers keeps talking about it.
Yeah, makers of League of Legends, which, by the way, if you have never played League of Legends, I'm going to urge you now, please don't.
I'm not. Please don't. I like having a life. I won't play MMOs and I won't play League of Legends.
That's not an MMO. Technically, it's a MOBA. But
any of those games that's entire business model is built on you not having a life outside of the game.
Yeah, yeah. And I think part of that maybe is why the community is like super toxic. Like, I know Riot has tried to clean things up in numerous ways, but everyone I know that plays that game just spends all their time that they're not playing it talking about how much they hate it and they hate themselves and they feel terrible every time they play. And I'm like, why don't you just stop? Just don't play it anymore. And then they go play again.
I've got an off-air story about League of Legends for you that I really want to tell on air, but I won't.
Okay, that's fair. Well, okay, so Legends of Runeterra, though, is the CCG that they just put out. And I thought, what the giggles. I'm not going to put any money in it, but I'll at least check out the mechanics and stuff because some other friends had been talking about those. And honestly, I kind of like it. I don't know that it has hooked me like other games to really get me into it, but it does have some neat tweaks to attacking and defending and like turns. It's kind of weird to try and explain just audio only like this, but turns alternate on who can or can't attack. So it's a little bit like Game of Thrones, right, in that you both have a round and you both get to keep doing stuff, and you alternate back and forth. Like, it's your turn to marshal, then it's their turn to marshal, and so on. But only one of you actually gets a challenge phase until the end of that round. And then next round, the other one gets the challenge phase, and so on. Okay. So it's kind of weird, kind of interesting. And attacking is just its own action. So there's a trade-off on, like, do I marshal more dudes right now before I attack so that I can swing bigger? Or am I afraid if I do that, he'll keep marshaling dudes and then I won't actually be able to get my attack through? Or so, like, do I swing now while he doesn't have any defenders, but I can only attack with one guy and then play all my stuff afterward? It's interesting. So I kind of recommend folks try it out and play around with it. I think it's definitely worth trying. So tentative.
If someone will teach me it, I will happily check it out. But I will not watch YouTube and learn on my own.
Okay. That's fair.
All right. I believe that's our episode.
That's our whole episode? We knocked this whole thing out in 42 minutes?
Yeah. Jeez. It's crazy when Roy doesn't go on monologues.
He doesn't go on monologues all that often.
Twice an episode.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? It is funny that you bring Roy up because I do think we have one last prop for the episode, and I think this is a good one to close out on, and that's going to be props to Roy and Alla, whose anniversary is today while we're recording, which is why he is not appearing on this episode. So props to both of them for their nuptials last year. They both are great people, and I'm happy to see that they seem to be doing really well together. So, again, props to you guys.
Yeah, props to them. Miss him a lot.